Greetings and welcome to the Axonics Strategic Income Fund Second Quarter Investor Call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the one followed by the four on your telephone. If at any time during the conference you need to reach an operator, please press the star zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Tuesday, July 21st of 2020. I would now like to turn the conference over to Brian Smith. Please go ahead.
Thank you and welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining our call today. My name is Brian Smith, Partner and CEO of SkyPoint Capital Partners. Before I introduce our speaker, I wanted to highlight the fund's performance for the time period April 1st, 2020, through June 30th, 2020. The Axonics Strategic Income Fund has returned 4.03% compared to its benchmark, the Bloomberg Barclays U.S. Aggregate Bond Index, which returned 2.9% over the same time period. As of June 30th, the fund held $428 million in assets under management. The fund's objective is to maximize total return through a combination of current income and capital appreciation. Our speaker today is Clay Giacinto, founder and CIO of Axonic Capital. Axonic was launched in the depth of the mortgage crisis and today employs 49 seasoned professionals. As of June 30th, 2020, the firm manages approximately $3 billion in structured credit assets for institutional investors and private LP separate accounts, an interval fund, and the Strategic Income Fund, AXSIX. Prior to forming Axonic, Clay was the head of mortgage trading for Tower Research Capital LLC from December 2008 through December 2010. From July 2002 through March 2008, he was vice president in the Fixed Income Currency and Commodities Group at Goldman Sachs, with responsibility for the hybrid and adjustable-rate mortgage trading business. Clay received his MBA in finance and statistics from the Wharton School of Business. He served as a captain in the U.S. Army in the 25th Infantry Division from 1995 to 2000 after completing the U.S. Army Ranger School. He received a BS in mechanical engineering from the U.S. Military Academy at West Point. When I was first introduced to Clay in spring of 2019, my partners and I at SkyPoint wanted to partner with the very best in breed in structured credit. With Clay and Axonics, we found a tremendously experienced team, a proven track record, especially in periods of distress, an institutional investor base, and a philosophical alignment on risk. Since the current dislocation related to the COVID-19 pandemic, Axonics has once again weathered the storm and attracted approximately $1 billion in new investment capital, which we believe is a testament to investor confidence in their ability to manage risk and generate attractive risk returns. Our goal for this call is to give you better insight into the firm's investment capabilities across all structured credit and their disciplined and well-thought-out approach to risk, which we believe to be their greatest differentiator in the daily liquid space. With that, I will now turn over the call to Clay.
Thanks, Brian, and good morning, everybody. I guess I'd like to talk for maybe 15 or 20 minutes. I'll talk a little bit about the background of the firm, structured credit as an asset class, why we're in the daily fund mutual fund business, talk about the impacts of COVID-19 on our portfolio and the future view of the business, and then talk a little bit about how we're positioning the portfolio and risk, and then we'll open up for questions. Like Brian said, I was a mortgage trader at Goldman Sachs after my time in the Army and business school. There, the idea was very sector-specific. So I ran the adjustable-rate mortgage business, but it was all parts of the capital structure, and we were quite agnostic if the risk would be in loan or securitized or synthetic form. So my purview was everything within the adjustable-rate mortgage silo, not specific to securities or loans or what have you. I left Goldman in 2008 because I wanted to form my own firm and take advantage of the last financial crisis as a principal, as an entrepreneur. And there's no doubt that our LP product, which now has an 11-year track record, hit it out of the park starting in 2009 for about a few years, where I think we doubled people's money coming out of the last global financial crisis. Since then, the market has certainly morphed into much more of a strategic credit multi-strat business. My background being mortgages was great for the distress and recovery trade, but we really wanted to be structured credit multi-strat. So that means we added sector expertise in CMBS, commercial real estate loans, asset-backed securities, and CLOs, and we trade and invest in all of those various asset classes. Like Brian said, we have 49 professionals at the firm. About 20 are investment professionals. I have two. I serve as the chief investment officer, and I have two of my partners, Matt Weinstein and Jomshin Engineer, are co-heads of credit. We allocate across the sectors accordingly, thinking about the relative risk versus return for all of the sectors. In our main LP product with an 11-year track record, we're striving for a high single-digit return with low single-digit volatility. So we do hedge it, both rates and credit hedge. I think what's really interesting and perhaps a differentiator in how we're thinking about risk and certainly how we're investing in the Axis product is we very much think that these cash flows have a fundamental bias that we need to know and understand. And if you ever get a chance to talk to some of our PMs or co-heads of credit, it is very unlikely that you're going to hear people talk about buying a spread or buying a price where we hope it trades up and then we can sell it. It's really not in our DNA to buy low and sell high. I think what's much more in tune with the way that we're viewing risk is we're buying a series of cash flows. And so we try to, you know, if we're going to invest a dollar, we want to make sure that we get our dollar back, plus through natural amortization of principal and interest, plus a return on that dollar. And so we keep duration pretty short. Now is not a time that we think we're supposed to extend and add on a bunch of risk. Our view is not that spreads will always tighten, but if we can put out money and make sure that we get that money back on a cash flow basis, it may make a lot of sense to invest in it. Over the past 10 years, I guess I'll talk a little bit about structured credit just as an asset class. There's been a tremendous amount of re-regulation of the global banking and insurance industry as it relates to structured credit. And I think that's a little bit of wind in the sail as it relates to structured credit investors, because it's not a crowded space. There's, you know, we have a handful of competitors, but if you add up the entire structured credit investable market by the number of sector specialists, we're very much dwarfed by the market. So we think it's an incredibly large market with very few relevant investors that can actually do, know, and understand the credit work. And it's absolutely not a market for tourists. When we partnered with the SkyPoint team and Brian Smith and team last fall, the view was really the following. We thought that there was a market for a daily fund product. We thought that we could manage the risk for a daily fund product quite well. And we thought that it married very well with our institutional LP product. So, again, we're one of a cash flow bias fundamental investors. Often we find ourselves investing in what I'll call the fulcrum risk of a capital structure, which can be the first loss piece and a debt pool, sometimes called a residual, a lot of non-investment-grade securities or equity tranches of securitizations. And it made sense for us, if we're doing the deep discount credit work anyway, that we could move up the capital structure into highly rated non-IG or even triple B or single A space and invest on behalf of the Axis investors in a daily fund product where we're doing the deep discount credit work anyway. So, of course, if we like the bonds under the triple B, we could go ahead and add the triple B to the Axis fund because we've done the credit work anyway. And we thought that made a lot of sense. We've seen the growth in RIAs and family offices allocated to daily fund products. It makes sense to us. I think what we're seeing in the institutional landscape is one where folks are allocating credit and they're being more mindful of just investment grade or high yield credit. And they're allocating to structured credit. It's an asset class that has a tremendous income component. It's a cash flowing asset that organically delevers over time from principal and interest. And most importantly, I think when people look at it relative to corporate credit, everything in structured credit is backed by a cash flow, and that's backed by a real asset. And so LTV is a lot different than high yield or IG, where leverage is a function of an EBITDA and a multiple. And so we take a lot of confidence getting to the granular asset level in the confidence of our downside protection investing in these assets. And our goal, of course, is to not only create an income component, but also find alpha throughout the structured credit universe, not just RMBS. Our largest exposures in the fund right now are CMBS, commercial real estate SASB, and RMBS. Let me talk about March. March, we think, was a really interesting time in structured credit. I think that if I were to look at what happened to prices that month in private funds as well as public funds, I would say that 90% of the price dislocation was a function of liquidity. There's no doubt that in a COVID work-from-home environment where it happened to be a quarter end for many bank balance sheets, at the same time that daily mutual funds and REITs needed or wanted to sell, there was just no liquidity, and it was further exacerbated by margin lenders seizing collateral and then trying to sell these assets into effectively a no-bid market. And prices went down substantially. But our view is not that this should be a V-shaped recovery. There's no doubt that the fundamentals of structured credit assets, be it mortgages, loans, leases, office, retail, even in single family residential, there's some real stress in the system as it relates to people paying these notes that are due. But we really see this as an opportunity. Whereas I think March was probably 90% liquidity, 10% credit, I think that the market today and the market on a go-forward basis will be much more centered around the credit profile of these assets. And I couldn't be more excited about the current opportunity set. There's been a lot of money raised just in the past few months for this asset class and credit and distressed credit in general. And I've even seen some of the investor decks, and they effectively say, hey, listen, we're going to dust off the old playbook and sort of trade this structured credit market akin to the way we did in 2010. And I couldn't be more vehemently opposed to that view. I think that the current crisis we're in is significantly different than the last global financial crisis. And I think that this is where last global financial crisis, everything was cheap. And you didn't necessarily need to be a sector specialist or have a view on default probabilities or recovery probabilities to be able to make wise decisions. You could effectively buy a sector and ride the beta up. We don't think that's today's market. We think this is a market where you actually have to pick your sweet spots. There are sectors to load in on, and there are sectors to avoid. There's simply not enough data to put on some of the risks that I see folks putting on right now. And we're certainly not betting on a V-shaped recovery. Vaccine or no vaccine, we have a tremendous amount of unemployment in the country, and there's a lot of stress in the system. I think that, and let me also comment one more thing. There's been plenty of TALF funds raised, and you've seen Fed participation in broader credit markets, either lending TALF dollars for people to invest in these asset classes, or simply buying IG, high yield, even some ETFs that hold high yield in it. So a lot of these markets have ripped back substantially. There's been really no Fed involvement in structured credit assets. So, you know, I obviously have been in this market for a long time. I would say a lot of these things today that I would say in April. But what's most interesting when I compare and contrast the asset classes today is so many other of these asset classes have run up. You know, we're hitting new highs in stocks today. High yield and IG have tightened in substantially because of Fed involvement. And that's just simply not the case in structured credit. So not only do I think that structured credit is cheap in and of itself, in absolute fashion, I think it's very cheap in a relative fashion as people think about their relative allocations. The Axis portfolio, I mentioned our view when we first started was to be up the capital structure. We thought that a daily fund, given the assets that it's supposed to, it should be investing in, would make right around 5 or 6%. It should do it as a function of mainly income, and it shouldn't have a lot of volatility. I think what's most interesting today is the timing of the launch of the fund with this current dislocation. We were very lucky or smart, I don't know which, when we started our firm back in 2009 to be able to launch an LP product and came out of the gates quite strong. And we're also quite lucky in the timing of a launch of a daily fund product. So most of this portfolio has been built or purchased sort of late March and beyond. And so we're able to curate a portfolio knowing the risks around COVID and being able to take advantage of the price dislocation accordingly. The sectors that we don't like, and I'll tell you, I think this is one reason why you saw so many daily funds go down in price, is simply a function of duration. I mean, you know, when people expect a daily fund to make high single digits, or even I saw some returns in the low double digits, that means that the assets that are in the fund just shouldn't be in a daily fund product. They're reaching for risk, and they're either taking too much spread duration or too much credit risk for that daily fund portfolio. That's different today. Today we have an incredible opportunity set where we don't need to take a lot of risk to still be able to make an agreeable return in this daily fund product. So we're now looking at assets, and this was something that we did back in 2009 and 10, where we can compare and contrast the relative opportunities by a concept that we call yield to worst. And yield to worst means that we're going to run very harsh default, prepayment, and recovery assumptions. And if we can run fairly harsh assumptions and still achieve a mid-single-digit yield, there's only upside from there. So our portfolio today, we think, has a yield in the mid to high single digits. But we think from a total return component, it's in the low to mid teens. The sectors that we're avoiding would be things like non-QM, CRT, CLOs, and conduit CMBS. And I can safely say that these aren't things that we're just going to avoid for a daily fund. These are also things that we're avoiding for our LP products. It just doesn't feel to us that you're getting compensating appropriately for the risk that you're taking. I guess let me address CMBS and commercial real estate for a second. One of our largest holdings in our private funds is our Freddie Mac B pieces. This is a relationship that we've built and formed with Freddie over the past 6 or 7 years, where we're their largest small balance B piece buyer. We helped them construct this program back in 2014 and 15. And where we were, you know, in the beginning of the program, we were probably 85% of their business. They opened it up to four or five other market participants. So although we were their number one counterparty, there were three or four other folks alongside with us. And in a post-COVID world where we've seen funds completely step back, either because they're in some form of liquidation or wind down, we're now one of two funds involved in Freddie Mac's small balance B pieces. And frankly, in the end of March, we were able to lock up a May and a July deal at yields of 16%, whereas pre-COVID, they were right about 9%. I mentioned the strategy because it's a large one in our private funds product, but there's also mezzanine off of these securitizations. Oftentimes, the way that Freddie distributes risk for multifamily is there would be a B-piece buyer. That's the bottom, the fulcrum, 7.5% or 10% part of the capital structure. But then there's some investment grade rated credit or investment grade like credit between the B piece and the government guaranteed portion. And we've been very active in that market for the daily fund. We think it's a par dollar asset all day long. The price became quite dislocated in March and April, and there's been some recovery since. But you'll see us continue to rotate out of this product into other like risks. One of the incredible opportunities in today's market is the inefficiency of the trading landscape. Wall Street remains a work-from-home environment. The street in general doesn't have capacity to add this risk. So we found the trading environment quite fruitful and like something that we haven't seen since 2009 and 10. And what I mean by that is that we can sell risk at 99 cents on the dollar that we bought in, you know, the high 80s or 90, but we can redeploy that money into a very similar cash flow stream in the low to mid 90s, and that's something that we don't think will last forever, but we think it's an incredible trading market right now. And anytime we can pick up three nickels, we're going to try to do that in all of our funds. We also like SASB. So the portfolio right now is the largest allocation, 60 to 80%, would be mortgage credit. I mentioned the agency MEZ, part of the capital structure that we're invested in. We like SASB. That stands for single asset, single borrower type pieces of paper or loans that can be in CUSIP form. For us, we have a very high degree of confidence around the underwriting of that specific asset versus something like a conduit CMBS B-piece or even some of the mezzanine paper and conduit CMBS. I don't exactly know what all the competitors do, but I have to believe we're probably one of the only commercial real estate investors that loves the B-piece associated with Freddie Mac underwriting and hasn't bought one other conduit B-piece. That's a giant sort of a bifurcation when we think about conduit collateral versus agency-originated collateral. And there's just not enough return available right now in the conduit collateral. I said another way, not that there's not enough return, said another way, we think there's far too much risk. But it doesn't mean that we're not always going to like that sector. There's plenty of triple Bs right now trading at 50 cents on the dollar. Our view is that this is not something that you're supposed to categorically go out and buy because everything's going to go up in price. Our view is when you look at the fundamental assets that are backing a conduit pool, there remains plenty of retail, some industrial, some office. We have to, you know, real estate is a hyper-local market, and office in New York will trade quite different than office in Toledo. And it's important that we know and understand all of those nuanced characteristics. So sat in SASB land, where the risk is to a single asset or single borrower, we can get quite comfortable versus trying to get comfortable with a pool of conduit, a conduit collateral. When you're the credit when you're the credit buyer or mezz buyer, where we've seen a lot of other daily funds participate, you're not necessarily levered to the mean and standard deviation of a pool. You're really levered to the five worst loans, and that's where we continue to see significant stress in the system. In the RMBS space, which is probably our second largest allocation in the daily fund, we have a preference for legacy RMBS versus RMBS 2.0. That would be securitizations done pre-2008 and post-2008. And again, this is no different than how we're thinking and formulating the investment in our LP products. We've stayed away from RMBS 2.0, not because we don't like it in the base case, but because we don't like it in the bear case. And most of these bonds, or most of these borrowers, have a fair amount of stated income or stated asset borrowers, which happens to be 50% of the self-employed. And I think that we don't need to be a macro specialist to understand what's happening in the small business market today in a COVID and potentially a post-COVID world. So we've allocated and we found very cheap assets on the legacy side. We'll continue to search for those. I think for us, we're always trying to build alpha or convexity in the portfolio, which means that there should be some other fundamental attribute to the asset versus just a pure carry asset. Again, we're not buying things that we hope will just tighten and spread. As it relates to legacy RMBS, we're buying CUSIPs in the 60s and 70 cents on the dollar that, frankly, we liked in the 80s and 90s and cents on the dollar, so we just like them more when they're cheaper. And the reason why they widened out so much was not just spreads got cheaper, but also duration extended, because it goes back to this concept of yield to worst. In anything that's structured credit related, before we talk about price or before we talk about yield, we have to talk about the fundamental characteristics of the future cash flows. And so that's coming up with a default curve, a prepayment curve, and a recovery curve. And in legacy RMBS, we've been able to assume a prepayment curve near zero. And so duration's extended out quite a bit. And also, there hasn't been embedded into the price a call component where the CUSIP can be called at par, which is something that was happening in March, or I should say in February, pre-COVID. But we think that'll come back in play. So there's certainly a total return component to a lot of the bonds that we're buying. I think that there's a current yield, which makes sense, but really being able to curate a risk pool in a dislocated market, I think is what is giving such a tremendous edge right now in this market. We didn't have any securities that we were hung with pre-COVID or any securities that we didn't bend the portfolio to meet any sort of redemption or liquidation cycle. But it's a brand new portfolio that we're really excited about. And it's a little bit different than how we envisioned this fund when we partnered with the SkyPoint team last fall. But I think it's an exceptional opportunity to get exposure to this dislocation through a daily product. I guess lastly, we also have some ABS that would be some mezzanine auto ABS, as well as some top part of the capital structure in aviation ABS, which, as you can imagine, has seen a tremendous amount of price dislocation. These are not assets that we're stretching for risk. We're not going down the capital structure in either of these ABS securities, but we're seeing pretty interesting high single digits unlevered yield at the top part of the capital structure. And what's interesting in structured credit broadly is not only are there loans or leases that are backing the collateral, but there's also structural nuances to the securitization. And so what's happening in ABS and ABS in particular is the Bs and the Cs, which would be much more of the fulcrum part of the securitization, are turning off the cash flow, and it's turboing down the A's and the B's. So again, I think that's a particular nuance to this part of the structured credit market that we find exceptionally attractive. And it also really mitigates a lot of the risk associated with the underlying collateral profile. I think I've covered everything I want to cover. I talked about the trading opportunities, the inefficient market. Let me talk about one more thing as it relates to risk management. This is a market where yield, you know, if you believe that we're correct on the underlying profile of the cash flows, when price goes down, it's simply pushing yield out. And when price goes up, it's simply pushing or pulling yield forward. And that's very much how we think about structured credit as an asset class. Every month, we get a remittance report on all of the underlying collateral characteristics of every single line item that we own. We've now turned this into a pretty efficient computer-driven process, but it's what we call our surveillance and maintenance process, and it happens between the 25th of the month and the end of the month, which is right when all of the remittance reports come. And what we're trying to do in this surveillance and maintenance process is think about, are the cash flow characteristics, are our curves that we anticipated and that we predicted, are they as expected? Is it better than expected? Or is it worse than it is expected? And again, you're not going to learn a lot in one-month increments, but you will learn a lot in rolling three-month increments, which is really how we're looking at this collateral. And this is what informs our buy and our sell decision. I think it's really important to understand that. Some people have asked me on the institutional side, they say, well, do you have stop limits? And I said, well, let me understand what you're asking. If a price goes down a certain amount, we would sell it because that's supposed to risk manage. And that's not the case in structured credit at all. In fact, if the profile of the asset or our future prediction of cash flow is the same or better, and price goes down, we're actually supposed to buy more of it, which is really what's happening right now. In all of our LP products, and Brian mentioned that we've raised $1 billion just in the past few months, these are the type of assets that we're buying. The prices are lower than they were pre-COVID. Some we've changed our assumptions on, some we have not. But even the ones where we've changed the assumptions for the worse, meaning we do expect some amount of fundamental deterioration, prices are such that it still makes sense on a total return and a yield basis. So that's how we think about the market. At the end of the day, they're cash flows that are backed by real assets. We get excited about that. I think institutional investors are putting us in alternative fixed income or alternative credit or a subslice of the credit portfolio. The fact is that in the 90s, what's now called high yield was called junk bonds. Everybody hated junk bonds, but everybody loves high yield. We think that structured credit is starting to be a core asset class. I think that's how institutional investors are treating it. And what's particularly hard for your market, and I do empathize with you, I have the luxury of sort of being an inch wide and a mile deep. So everything relative to structured credit, we can know and understand and invest in accordingly. Your job which you're investing high net or high income folks as an RIA is much more difficult because you have to think across asset sectors and sort of define a portfolio between equity and fixed income. And the reason why that's hard is because equities are at all-time high and fixed income yields are at all-time low. And I think where people are putting us in the portfolio would be one where it still has an income component, but it's backed. It's backed by real assets and real cash flows, and it should be a stabilizer of income to an otherwise risky portfolio, be it equities or other private equity or corporates or something like that. So that's where people put us. That's where people would have put us pre-COVID and in the fall and in the summer, and that's where people continue to put our LP products. Right now, given the current dislocation, we think there's an incredible opportunity to make a lot more than 5 or 6%. Brian, I'll stop right there and open it up to questions.
Great. Yeah, operator, can we open the phone lines for questions?
Thank you. If you would like to register for a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. One moment, please,
and
for the first question.
Thank you. Clay, while we're waiting, can you just speak very quickly on kind of what you see third and fourth quarter given the current situation and how you're positioning the portfolio to be defensive in nature and also how you plan on managing kind of the short-term liquidity given the current environment?
Yeah. Well, listen, I made a lot of comments about how great the structured credit asset class is and how exciting of a time this is to be investing. But I don't want anybody to come away from this phone call thinking that we're macroeconomic bullish. We can still construct a portfolio that's very defensive in nature, which is what we've been trying to do. We haven't needed to stretch down the capital structure and stretch into credit risk assets to earn a return. We still think that we want to be positioned defensively. This means invest in shorter credit spread duration assets, a high cash flowing portfolio. Again, structured credit vis-a-vis high yield or IG has a really nice organic deleveraging profile. And what I mean is, by the nature of principal and interest paydowns, which occur on a monthly basis, the portfolio organically converts risk into cash. In our LP products, we can talk about March and April. We can talk about taper tantrum, the winter, winter of 15 and 16, late 2018. In all of these time periods, and again, I would say that macroeconomic sell-off was more drawn out than the one that we had in March. But in all of those time periods, our portfolio was constructed to pay itself back right around 2 to 3% a month. So if you think about a drawdown in the S&P that may last, I don't know, three months, 6 months, something like that, we can construct a portfolio that will organically turn risk into cash. If it's 6 months, it may be somewhere between 15 and 20% of the portfolio organically delevers. And we really enjoy that because we're loading up on cash at the exact time that you can invest in cheaper assets. And that's what we've done in our LP product. We're going to do the exact same thing in the daily fund product. As you know, Brian, we have a healthy amount of cash. I think right now we're somewhere between 20 and 25%. That feels comfortable to me. When I look at the investable universe. Being in the market every day and buying sort of core structured credit assets doesn't seem that interesting to me. There's some specific portfolio trades and one-off bilateral opportunities that we're working on with specific dealers. You know, these are trades that take a while to consummate, but I think they're nice alpha contributors to the portfolio. And once we put them in the portfolio, we expect them to increase the positive P&L attribution significantly. So it's a buyer's market. That doesn't mean that we want to that we're bulled up and want to commit a lot of cash. We feel comfortable with the cash position that we have. And again, this is a trader's market. So it's possible to buy and sell a very like security and make money doing it.
Great, thanks. Operator, are there any questions?
Yes, we do have some questions. The first line comes from Christopher Engelbert. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, guys. Thanks for this call. Really very good presentation. I know you probably don't get, as granular on some of these mortgage-backed securities, but just to address, the typical RIA client base, I have clients when I pitch this fund, we all see the same news that, all these guys have levered up and bought multiple houses on Airbnb, and, those mortgages are in forbearance, and, that second wave is going to hit sometime late third quarter, early fourth quarter. Are you seeing anything like that? And I also have a follow-up question, too.
This is a market that will have, currently has and will have fundamental impairment in a big way. And we're really excited about the opportunity set that's going to present. I mentioned, and I have this luxury plus a curse of being an inch wide and a mile deep, and we can go as deep as you want. I mentioned specifically to RMBS, which is residential mortgage-backed securities. This would just be, run-of-the-mill, single-family, owner-occupied for the most part, probably 90%. But the assets that we like were originated pre-2008. We have 140 months of pay history on these assets. We have updated LTVs, updated FICO scores from the underlying market participant. We've observed their borrower behavior for the past 12 or 13 years. We can very much feel comfortable having some confidence around the predictability of the forecasted default, prepayment, and recovery characteristics of this pool of assets. The area that we've specifically stayed away from has been non-QM. And again, if I'm to be really intellectually honest about what we're good at, anybody can tell you about how good they are at investing. I love it. It's sexy. We're going to buy a cheap bond, and we do that. But honestly, other people will tell you the same thing. What we're really good at is staying away from the bad bonds. This non-QM market is terrifying. There have been at least four securitizations done post the March lows of non-QM where up to 30% of the underlying borrowers are in some form of forbearance. When the cutoff to AAA is 8%, and you have 30% of borrowers in forbearance, I simply don't. Nobody at my firm is smart enough to figure out how many of those are going to cure or when they're going to cure. We simply don't have that data. But I promise you, we are looking at the data every single month as it gets updated to be comfortable about when we are going to make a play in these more MES securities of non-QM. And by the way, I think we can be patient around the timing of that. I would never pay near par for an asset like that, but they cleared the market near par or at par, and they're still there. We are seeing that. I think that that in effect is going to lead to a tremendous opportunity. You know, when you peel back the onion on all of the structured credit managers, and I heard Brian mention our sort of quarter over quarter performance. I don't really know how that compares with everybody else out there. But I imagine that everybody's positive, and some people were probably positive because they had or owned high beta assets that went down a lot in price and then are going up a lot in price. We don't have a portfolio of high beta assets. And if you were to go ask a manager who has non-QM, where is this stuff pricing? And they'll say, my triple Bs are at 96 cents on the dollar. And then you ask him where the attached detach is, and then you ask him the amount of loans in forbearance. He should be telling you a pretty scary story. And then I think you have to say, how can you defend owning something at 96 cents on the dollar if that's the amount of loans in forbearance right now? I couldn't agree with you more. Your clients have a right to be, sort of cautious around it. And we think it's going to present a forward opportunity that's going to be pretty compelling.
Great. Now, let me follow up with that. That was a very good explanation. I agree with you, too. So 3 years ago, I went to a Goldman Sachs conference. The old guy said, our number one place that we see the best investment is prime AAA real estate office buildings in downtown Los Angeles, Atlanta, and New York City. Well, I deal with a lot of attorneys that are in those office buildings, and they've been telling me that they're not going back to those office buildings until January. What's the state of that AAA commercial real estate market? I mean, is that like the residential mortgage-backed securities market of 08, 09? I mean, I can't believe that stuff is trading at premiums anymore. And what's the discount, if it is a discount?
Well, I guess we're all buying it because the Fed is buying it. And I assume you and most of your clients are taxpayers. So we're buying it. I think that spreads are probably artificially tight. The AAA CMBS is one sector where the Fed is involved in. That's not a sector that, frankly, we've ever participated in. But let me get a little bit more granular about it. Large metro, sort of top five metro office is where there's trophy assets. And the Koreans, the Chinese, the South Americans, there's a lot of investors that love investing in trophy assets, and cap rates on those assets are they traded as tight as starting with a 3 handle. I don't really understand why somebody would buy that unless you're just so bullish you're trying to park your money and try not to lose money or just hold it long term. The remote office environment is something that's changed significantly post-COVID. Metro office is not something that we've found particularly interesting. Not because we think that AAAs could be impaired, just from a valuation perspective. We found cheaper alternatives across other CMBS and commercial real estate, asset classes and geographies. I think that we're the same. We have a unfortunately we just signed a 10-year lease in right in Midtown Manhattan. But I've heard the same story about folks not going back, and I think there will continue to be stress in that market. Now I will tell you that AAAs are fairly well enhanced. I don't think that you're going to see any sort of principal impairment there. But most of these office-type loans have ended up in conduit CMBS. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. When you invest in conduit CMBS, you're not levered to the mean and standard deviation of these pools. Those look fine. They're great LTV, you know, great NOI, you know, plenty of debt service coverage ratio. I get that. On averages, they look okay. But if you're investing in, you know, triple B or below in those securitizations, you're not levered to the mean and standard deviation. You're levered to the worst five loans. And if one of those loans go bad and you're a B-piece owner, you're going to have permanent impairment to your investment. We CMBS and commercial real estate is our biggest asset class. Let me talk quickly about what we have in our private funds. I did mention it's a lot of B pieces. It's a partnership with Freddie. We like it for a couple reasons. Number one, we always found this asset class defensive. This is Class B and Class C multifamily housing, geographically dispersed all throughout the country, garden style. Low-rise apartments that's, you know, anywhere between $900 and $1,300 a month. That's Class B and Class C. You know what they're not building any more of right now? Class B and C. Every new multifamily, you know, development that you see is Class A plus. Comes with, you know, granite countertops, stainless appliances. They probably give you a yoga mat when you walk in because they have a yoga meditation room, right? It's a lot of amenities and very, you know, top rated stuff. That's the stuff that we're gonna sink. Even in multifamily is going to be impaired first, and only after a few months of data, we've already seen this. Vacancies in Class A now start with an 8, right? It's into the 80s. We've seen vacancies in Class B and Class C actually decrease. So that exact shift that we thought that we would see, of course, we never thought a COVID event would happen, but we just thought that the macroeconomy was a little bit long in the tooth. Why would you want to stretch into some, you know, development or Class A plus stuff right now? We wanted to be defensive. Class B, they're not building any more of it. We knew that in a recessionary environment, it should perform better than the Class A, and certainly a lot better than office. And that's exactly what we're seeing. And so, it's sort of hard to forecast what the future is going to hold for us. But I'll tell you, I really like what we own right now, but I'm even more excited about what we expect to be the future opportunity set. Because, you know, again, I go to this component. If March was 90% liquidity and 10% credit, I don't think that we're ever going to have, you know, touch wood. I do not think we're going to have a weird, work from home market illiquidity seizure that we did the last 2 weeks of March. But I do think as the data continues to present itself and somebody sitting on a triple B conduit CMBS that they have marked at 98 cents on the dollar, and then they see it get marked to 90 and then 80 and then 70 and then 60, that at some point in time, somebody's going to get a tap on the shoulder. They're going to have to sell it, and they're not selling it because the market has evaporated, you know, the liquidity has evaporated from the market, and they're a forced seller, or they're a stressed seller, or they're meeting some redemption. They're going to sell it because the underlying assets are bad, some of them. It's our job to figure out the underlying assets that are good when somebody's selling something at 50 cents on the dollar, and that's going to be an incredible, you know, sort of structured credit super cycle that we're excited for. That was a long-winded answer. I'm not even sure if I answered it, but.
Operator, any further questions on hold?
Yes, we do. We have another question. It comes from the line of Dexter Wise. Please go ahead with your question.
Hey, thanks for the time here, Clay. Two questions. One, what is your guys' use of derivatives in the daily fund? And second, what are the five requirements for asset predicted fire?
Brian didn't tell me to brush up on my field artillery manual. We don't. There's no derivatives that we're employing in the daily fund.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Susan Faye. Please go ahead with your question.
Yeah, this is Susan Faye from Wharton Capital. Thanks for the call and thanks for the great performance in the second quarter. Can you expand a little bit on the ABS portion of the portfolio? What you think when you're stressing, especially on the aircraft ABS, and what would it take for you to have capital impairment in the ABS portion?
Yeah. That's a great question. So specifically to something like aircraft ABS, in our LP products, we are owners of C's and E's. And to put this in context, we owned pre-COVID about $300 million of aircraft ABS in our private funds, obviously not in a daily fund. Since then, our C's and E's have been marked down a total of about $185 million. So that $300 million pool is now marked at $115 million. I think that our portfolio of C's is a money good asset. I'll talk about the stresses in a second. It's a money good asset. They're generally marked between 50 and 60 cents on the dollar. I think that our E's that are marked in the 30s and 40 cents on the dollar are a, it's an E, so it's the residual, it's the fulcrum asset, so it's, there's not a bond face notional amount. But whereas before we thought it was, sort of a 12 to 13% yielder at par, at 35, we still think it's a 12 or 13% yielder. But see, we've already taken this impairment. You know, our philosophy is that there's not necessarily bad bonds, there's only bad prices. And so the current pricing scenario for that particular security is 35 cents on the dollar, which, by the way, we still think is a yield, a positive yield asset at that price. We would never think about investing in either of those categories in the daily fund. Where we have found some opportunities are the A notes and the B notes. And so these are assets that I think in most stressed scenarios, well, in our stressed scenarios, they're absolute money good assets. And I do talk a lot about, see, there's a lot of assets that people should like in the base case. We want to make sure that we like our assets in a bear case. So our COVID stress scenario for aviation ABS is the following. We assume that there has been, since March, a 75% haircut in all cash flows. That's maintenance reserves, that's contractual rent, and that's renewal rent from now until the end of of 2020. 75%, then 50% in 2021, and then it starts to normalize the second half of 2022. But even then, we can stress renewal rents and maintenance reserves, something like 15 to 20% of what the forecasted rents are, and this is a very complex market. So when I say forecasted rents, I'm not suggesting that it's 20% off of today's rent. You know, planes are depreciating assets. So it's 20% off of a forecasted rent, which is already lower than today's rent in 2023. In this case, right, because of the structure of securitization where the C's and E's are locked out, and the A's and B's will continue to turbo down, this is a money good asset, and it's a money good asset even in our bear case. We've been particularly attentive to the underlying collateral. We have a strong bias towards narrow body versus wide body. You know, narrow body is generally used for domestic travel. Wide body is used for, you know, long haul flights or international travel. We think domestic travel globally will pick up before international travel. And so, you know, again, I think we're defensively positioned. I'm happy to share models and to share runs of where we're owning the seasonings, where there is some real fundamental stress, but not in the A's or the B's. And for context, we're buying the A's at, like call it, you know, very high 80s or low 90s cents on the dollar. And that will be, that's about a 8 or 9% yield for like a 3-year duration asset.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you'd like to register for a question, please press the 1-4. And at this present time, no one has registered for any questions. Please continue with your presentation or closing remarks.
Great. Well, Clay, thank you very much. Very informative call. I'm sure there'll be some potential follow-up questions from the attendees, and we'll happily forward those on. We'd like to thank everybody for joining. We're coming up just over an hour, so wish everybody the best. Please stay safe, and we'll look forward to speaking again in the future. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you. That does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your lines.